Time for us to connect via the old telephone line with our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Chad.
Hey, Rich. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Happy President's Day to you.
Oh, yes. I appreciate that. You know how much I celebrate that.
I know. Do you have a favorite president?
My favorite president is the next president. It's like what Tom Brady always says.
Yeah. So we're on to 47. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I want to talk about some exciting news in your world. Tell us a little bit about this upcoming book, Story of the Red Sox.
Well, I'm really hopeful that they send me more than one copy, which is what I have so far.
Wow.
But, it's a compilation of all the Globe's baseball coverage through the years. People might not believe this, but the Globe's actually been around longer than the Red Sox have. We covered the Red Sox from the very beginning, and even better than that, we actually covered them really thoroughly at the beginning. People talk about like how Peter Gammons invented the notes column. They actually had a very similar thing like in 1910s, you know.
Wow.
Shaughnessy complaining about the Titanic or anything like that, but very pleasant to discover that the coverage is very deep and thorough, so we could do a full book, basically including every important story in Red Sox history. And we really had everything. It's, like three paragraphs on the Jackie Robinson sham workout, but the Globe actually covered that. And Q&A visit with Babe Ruth when he came up to Maine in the winters and things like that. So pretty fulfilling to be able to pick all that out. And I did a little bit of writing for it, just the chapter intros and stuff. But mostly just weeding through Gammons and Ray Fitzgerald and Bob Ryan and people like that. So it's quite an honor.
Well, that's not a bad thing to wade through. I don't know if I've ever told you the story. When I was, early 20s, maybe late teens, I was down doing double duty. I was working in radio, but I was in college. And on spring break, would go to spring training and see games and would get a press pass and try to do a few interviews here and there. And I had occasion a couple of times to run into and chat with Ray Fitzgerald. And he was so incredibly helpful and nice to a young guy, introducing me to some people and helping me get some access that I had no right getting.
Yeah, I always heard that about him. He was a beloved figure at the Globe. And he has one of my favorite stories in the book, actually. He wrote a column when Louis Tiant signed with the Yankees, and the Haywood Sullivan screwing everything up left and right in those days. And he ended it by saying he wanted to go stick his head in an oven. So, that's a way to puncture it. I think that's how everybody felt, Louis going to, you know, pinstripes. But I don't know if I would have expected to see that in writing. But, he was one of the best. Yeah, the book is book's due out March 7th. But it's available on Amazon now. It's the Boston Globe Story of the Red Sox, and pretty good stuff in there, I dare say.
That's very exciting. Well, you know, if there is just that one copy and you have it, though, I suspect that'll really drive up the price.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I mean, if I could get like $3 million for the one copy, it would be okay. My father-in-law was recently calculating things with my wife, and decided we're going to be very well off if it sells 1 million copies. So, and then she discovered that only Stephen King and John Grisham really sell that many books. So, you know, we've already had one huge crash here in terms of expectations. But we'll sell a few anyway. I hope they send me a box, because there are a lot of people asking for them. And people have, you know, old high school teachers and stuff that I'd like to give them to.
It's wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. March 7th, Story of the Red Sox. Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. You wrote over the weekend about the passing of Tim McCarver, and certainly he was, I was saying the other day, and maybe I'm wrong in this, but there weren't a lot of analysts on television like Tim McCarver in baseball. We had them in football, but until he came along, I don't think we got guys that had his level of knowledge, but also the ability to relate to the average viewer.
Yeah, he was just an incredibly intelligent baseball mind, a smart person, too, and a well-rounded person. You want to go look it up. He has a CD of Tim McCarver Sings the Standards, so you can go find his musical instrument favorites out there, too. But Yeah, he was really the first baseball broadcaster who broke the game down in a digestible nuggets for us, but a really complicated way. You know, it was Joe Garagiola before that. It was kind of a charismatic personality, but he wasn't telling you anything you didn't know on the Saturday game of the week. A lot of times it'd be an ex-player who maybe had a big personality, but wasn't exactly filling you with knowledge. And McCarver was different. You know, he played four decades in the major leagues, 59-90, and a terrific young player. His career kind of petered out in the 70s, but he hung around for a long time because he was such a Steve Carlton's personal catcher, but also a really thoughtful guy. And that was evident in his many, many years as a broadcaster. And it petered out at the end, and I think Red Sox fans probably, I was one of them, was just really frustrated with him during the Sox-Yankees heyday, because he was, with the cooperation of Fox Sports' cameras, was one of the people who really glamorized Jeter and emphasized the curse stuff, just beat it into the ground. So you get frustrated with him then, but if you look at the big picture, he's really one of the best analysts of all time.
And not to take anything away from Tim McCarver, but as you pointed out, we've been pretty spoiled here in Red Sox country because we had the luxury of having a Jerry Remy and a Dennis Eckersley on for so many years, who were every bit as good, if not better, than almost any national analyst.
Yeah, I actually led my column off of that, just talking about how good we had it. If you're talking about McCarver as the best national guy, I would take Jerry Orak over him. Jerry, probably more of a regional voice, was the Tigers, but Pedroyer, you know. he was our guy. He was one of us. He looked at the Red Sox kind of cynically, but kind of had a heart of gold beneath it all. Eck could have been a national star. He just didn't want to do that. He did some TBS stuff and hated it. Just hated sitting in the studio all the time. And I liked watching the games, but felt like he couldn't really say what he wanted to say in those little condensed 15-second bursts. He wanted to talk about the game as it was happening. I know ESPN hired John Kroc over him at one point, and that kind of decided at that point that he's going to stay around here and do some A's stuff, but stay with the Red Sox. So that was our benefit. I think he could have been as good nationally as anybody, but just decided this was his place.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. So we're out of the NBA All-Star break. I think the NBA All-Star game has finally ended. Jason Tatum had about 113 points in that one. So we've got the Celtics playing great, the Bruins. Who has the next duck boat parade? Don't you say Red Sox.
Ooh, which playoff series ends sooner? Stanley Cup Finals or the NBA Finals?
Can they both win?
That would be something, wouldn't it? Mm. I mean, I've been to a few parades, and the most fun one by far, in my opinion, was the Bruins. And you know, hockey is probably the fourth sport on my list of favorites. But just it was in middle of summer, perfect day. Those Bruins players are really engaged in the community. You know, back you could go in the North End, you'd see Bergeron eating somewhere, Tuca and Sean Thornton were always around, and just really became part of the fabric of Boston. And that just had such a great vibe to it. And the weather was perfect. So if we could get two of those one summer, I know it's probably asking too much, but those would be some pretty glorious days in Boston sports history if two teams won the championship within very brief stretch of each other.
Obviously, we're pretty biased up here because of the connection to UMaine hockey with Jim Montgomery, but what a really terrific story. I mean, already, even if they don't win the Stanley Cup, it's a great story. But, I mean, this was a guy who it sure looked like the career was headed in the other direction a few years ago, and he's really resurrected himself.
Yeah, he's just one heck of a hockey person, isn't he? I mean, we know what he went through. You also know he's just an A-plus kind of guy.
Yeah.
I covered him in Maine. I knew him a little bit there. I've done some stuff with him since he came to the Bruins. I actually have a story with the UMaine Alumni Magazine on him that should be coming out pretty soon, where we sat down, had lunch one day, and just talked about the Maine days and his coaching journey. And anybody knew him at Maine, he's still the same guy, just They're real down to earth, and you've seen that have an effect on the Bruins this year, where his positivity, his coaching acumen's huge, but his positivity following Bruce Cassidy, who's an excellent coach in his own right, but a very sharp tongue that, you know, eventually bothered some guys. Jimmy's just the right fit at the right time for this team. And, you know, Don Sweeney, for a guy people wanted to run out of here a year ago, he suddenly had a lot of wins, trades, getting Lindholm, Zaka, some of the other things that he's done. But top of that list is being bold enough to give Jim a second chance.
And Joe Mazzulla, I'm not sure there's a tougher gig anywhere than being an NBA head coach, but then to step into the situation he had to walk into at the start of this season and seems to be, again, just a perfect fit for that job.
Yeah, he is. And it's interesting. He's really great at tucking his own ego aside. I mean, these guys feel comfortable talking about their relationship with Ime because Mazzulla is okay with it. That you know, Tatum and Marcus Smart and Jalen all really respected Ime as a coach and liked that he was the guy who gave them the kick in the butt to kind of get them playing the way they were supposed to play. And you know, Mazzulla is somebody who understands that he meant a lot to them, and he's not Ime. He has to do things his own way, and his own way has been great for the Celtics as well. I think their offense is a lot more creative and clever this year than it was a year ago. Haven't quite been the same defensively, though. That's tracked upward when Rob Williams came back. But he is the right guy for the job. I think we've all got questions about him that won't be answered until the playoffs are over, or whether he's going to be able to go tactic for tactic with a guy like Eric Spoelstra, whether he will use his timeouts appropriately, whether Jason Tatum is going to actually get some rest here along the way, things like that. But in terms of the way he's handled the team, the success that they've had, and the respect the players have for him, it's been just an A-plus job by him.
Red Sox spring training underway. Ownership, upper management met the press. And let's see if I can summarize this. Said, we're still spending a lot of money, but boy, we're going to be competitive. It's going to get better. And no, we're not going to spend like the Mets.
Yeah. You know, I didn't read Sean McAdams' interview yet, but I read Jim McCaffrey's. Mm. And the Globes reached out to John Henry, who everybody knows owns us, and he hasn't responded. I think it was Dan who wrote to him. Because he prefers to do things by email, because he feels like he puts his foot in his mouth in you know, public situations, which understandable, he has. Sometimes he can be too candid, but it's the thing that got me the more than anything else was the answer to Jen McCaffrey when he was asked about Bogaerts. Any regrets about that? And I think his answer was one sentence: "Yeah, we weren't giving him 12 years or something."
Yeah, like yeah.
Well, God, that is just you. If you had tried to sign him, genuinely tried to keep him when you could have, when he was essentially begging for an offer back in May, it would have been nowhere near 12 years and $280 million.
Right.
They could have had him for basically what Altuve signed for, $151 million. They just chose not to do it. And I wish they would own that, and they're not. And they really should. They should just be honest about why Bogaerts isn't here, because they didn't think he was worth the investment.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Always good to talk with you. Congratulations on the book. Look for the story of the Red Sox March 7th everywhere. And if you can't find a copy, just get in touch with me. We'll give you Chad's home address, and you can go get his copy and borrow it.
Yeah, it's got coffee stains and stuff all over it, but still, it's worth a couple million bucks.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you get to $3 million, $1 at a time.
Not kidding, Rich.
Thank you, Chad.
See ya.
Chad Finn with us on Downtown.